Crime Wine and Chaos contains adult language and graphic content. Listener discretion is advised.
Let's fucking go, Chaos Kids. I'm Naomi.
I'm Amber, and this is Crime, Wine, and Chaos. Dance it out, dance it. Let's fucking go.
Let's fucking go.
Do you like my, like, I'm tired and old dance?
Just a little, like slow head bop when I'm over here, like, my arms up like a cheerleader or something. I don't even know what I'm doing. It reminds me of, like, when toddlers start dancing for the first time.
That's the vibe you were giving off. And I was giving off the Troop Beverly Hills do the Freddy with the senior citizens. I'm the one that's like rolling away. Fuck it. I'm out of here.
When I'm 64.
I feel 64 today.
I feel it, sister.
Oh my gosh. Oh
man, what is going on with you?
Nothing. Speaking of feeling not 64, but happy birthday to you. You're not 64.
I mean, yesterday, yes. Not even close. No, I mean, I'm closer to 64 than I used to be. Let's put it that way.
Aren't we all? Oh my God.
I mean, it was a pretty low-key birthday. You know, what do you do when your birthday's a Wednesday, you know? And also, I'm so busy. I didn't even, like, who has time to make plans for a birthday on a Wednesday anyway? So it's fine. Saturday night, I went to a comedy show with Justin, which was amazing. And we had a really good time. And I considered that, like, my birthday outing. And then yesterday, shout out to Jen B.
Cool.
Chaos Kid Club member, friend of the show, and one of my coworkers who remembered me saying on one of our episodes, probably right around Thanksgiving time, that I love those. I don't remember. It might have been when you told the story about those fuckers in Carnation. Anyway, I talked about the Mary and Berry pies from Remlinger Farms.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And she went to Remlinger Farms yesterday morning before work. They weren't even open. She like got the lady to open and she brought me 3 frozen Mary and Berry pies.
That's from Remlinger Farms. Sweet. Oh my gosh.
So 2 more pies still in the freezer and like a little over half of a pie eaten on my counter because I had pie and ice cream for my birthday dinner last night. That's what I did.
I love that though. That's exactly what you should have had.
I say, forget about birthday cake. Bring me birthday pie. And well, you know how I feel about pie. You know how I feel about pie.
I do. Mm-hmm.
So that was a pretty epic birthday gift. So
that's
my week. I'm very tired per usual, but it was a pretty good day. How about you?
Same. Also, back to Jen B. People that remember little things that you say, those are good people.
Gems.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally.
So kudos to her. Good. You know, I'm having a love-hate relationship with working from home.
Oh.
Which is so funny.
You were so excited about it.
I still am. I remember I did my bachelor's degree entirely online and just like crushed it. And I was like, this is my jam. I'm so good at this. Oh my God. I have the attention span of a worm. What am I doing when I'm supposed to be working? I'm like, I just wander away and I'm sweeping.
Just wander away and all of a sudden I'm sweeping.
Yeah, that's me. Yep. And then I'll hear like a little ding and I'm like, oh fuck, I'm supposed to be in like a Teams meeting.
Oh like, my what, God. I kind of wish I had that problem where I just randomly found myself sweeping. Like that never happens here in my house. So
it happens a lot here. It happens a lot.
Maybe you need to lock up your broom.
Yeah, probably.
Give the key to Michael.
Oh God. No, then I mean we'll never find it again. Then there'll be zero sweeping ever.
Yeah. Mm. Sure. Then you just get a Roomba and you never have to think about it again.
Oh my God. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what you need in your life.
I need something.
Especially in that mansion that you live in.
Okay. I don't listen. I needed my own quadrant, Linda. Maybe that's what's happening. Maybe I'm wandering too far away from my office and getting lost.
Probably. I get lost every time I visit. Okay. So do you have a crime today?
I do.
Because you're on crime today. You know okay. that, right? Just checking.
Shut up. Yes. Okay. Real quick. I'm drinking a Villa de Mer.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
That's all right. It's a rosé because okay. it's hot AF here. So mm-hmm. I needed something mm-hmm. chill. And yeah, that's the most fun we're going to have because my crime is terrible.
Oh, yeah. You told me that.
I told you. I know. This one's really rough.
Okay. Rough. Okay. I'm going to ask again. Is this rough, like lay down and cry rough? Is this like flip tables rough or is this like nightmare rough?
Nightmare and cry.
Okay. Great. Great. You know what? I haven't had a good cry in a while. So bring it.
Well, please don't feel that I am not touched by this story if I don't cry. I've been living in this story and I'm cried the whole time I was trying to write it. So I might be all dried up.
Okay.
It's not a
reflection. Well, I mean, I'm all dried up, but that's for other reasons.
Oh, my condolences. I'm going to tell you the story of Judy Malinowski. She was born August 26, 1983, and grew up in suburban Ohio. She had a sister, Danielle, and a brother, Patrick, who she absolutely doted on. And she had a really happy childhood.
So she was the oldest?
Mm-hmm. Okay. She won beauty pageants and was even crowned homecoming queen her senior year.
Fancy.
But her pretty idyllic life was thrown into turmoil when she was diagnosed with ovarian cancer as a very young adult.
Oh, God.
And so she ended up getting a full hysterectomy and she was in such pain that the doctors prescribed her a whole bunch of opiates. And by the time she was finished with her recovery from the cancer and the hysterectomy, she unfortunately had an opiate addiction.
Oh, dear Lord.
Yeah.
Also, she was in menopause.
Yeah. And she's like in her 20s.
Oh, God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's so rough. Everything about this. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So she had two young daughters that she had at a pretty young age. So during this time, relatives helped care for her children while she was active in her addiction. And she did go to treatment and she was getting back on her feet and she was making really great progress. And that is when she began dating Michael Slager.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So Slager contacted Judy on social media. And basically from their first date, the two became like inseparable. Judy's family wasn't super keen on Michael. Her mom is like deeply religious and Michael's got like neck tattoos and all this, but she was trying to be open-minded. Mm-hmm. But what they didn't know was that he had a lengthy criminal record with many, many domestic violence charges. Yeah.
All right. He's a winner.
Mm-hmm. So during her relationship with him, Judy fell back into addiction because he would buy her drugs. He didn't use them himself at all. It was just like his way of
control.
Yeah. It was his way of controlling her and making her dependent on him.
Yep.
Okay. So this is bad trigger warning. Okay. On August 2nd, 2015, a 911 call comes in from a frantic woman who says she just witnessed someone set a woman on fire. The woman on fire is in a grassy area next to a Speedway gas station at a busy intersection. Police and fire respond, and Judy Malinowski and Michael Slager are taken to the hospital.
Okay.
Michael says that Judy spilled gasoline on her, and like he didn't know that, and then he went to light her cigarette, and she went up in flames.
I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
She spilled gasoline on herself, and he didn't know.
Oh, this guy is a fucking piece of shit. We'll get
obviously.
To it.
So, I mean, yes, mm-hmm. clearly.
Mm-hmm. And he just has like burns on his hands, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when investigators visit Judy in the hospital and they see her condition, they know that there's no way that that can be true. She has burned over 80% of her body.
Oh my God. What is it with you lately and these people with full body burns?
I don't know.
What's you know going what on?
It, you know what it was? I listened to an episode a few weeks ago of Red Handed and they were talking about how like acid throwing is like trending in the UK. And I was like, I'm sorry, what the fuck? And it just, kind of went down a rabbit hole of like people who are intentionally trying to disfigure someone. That is that's a different level of evil that I don't understand.
Very sadistic. Yes.
And the pain of being, I have burned myself on the oven cooking, like just like my hand or my arm is burned. And I literally can't sleep because it hurts bad and there's nothing that really alleviates it.
That's right.
And I just can't fucking imagine this. I can't imagine
your whole body. I can't. No. Mm-hmm. No. Nope. Can't fucking imagine.
Yeah. So that's what Michael says. But what he doesn't know and what the investigators find out is directly across from the gas station, there's a bank and they have
hello cameras.
Yeah. You can clearly see the entire altercation between the two of them. Michael took a gasoline can and poured gasoline all over Judy's head, all over her body, then goes back to his truck, gets a lighter, walks over to Judy, who's now sitting in the grass, like kind of rolling around in the grass, and he leans down and lights her on fire. It's fucking terrible. And this documentary, if anybody goes to watch it, it's very, I had to cover my eyes at many, many times because it was too much. So Judy is clinging to life in the hospital, but the detectives are hoping to be able to get some answers from her before she passes away. So they go to her room and the nurses agree to remove the intubation tube long enough for the detective to ask her some questions. She's not able to speak, but she's able to nod her head yes or no. And the detective asks her if this was an accident. And she shakes her head no. They ask her if Michael did this and if he purposely lit her on fire. And she shakes her head yes. So the detectives arrest Michael right there from his hospital bed in the same hospital where Judy is, by the way. And right. He is charged with felony assault and arson. And if Judy lives, the maximum sentence Michael could get in the state of Ohio would be 11 years. So this is where it gets cray, and Judy is a fucking badass. So Judy ends up living in the hospital for 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
Yes. So she, because she wants to be able to testify. So she's hoping initially that she gets better and that she can testify. So Michael, being the fucking piece of shit that he is, changed his plea from not guilty to no contest to prevent Judy from testifying. And he is sentenced to the 11 years.
Oh my God. Okay. Okay.
So the presiding judge.
Wait a minute. This isn't attempted murder.
No, it was felony assault and arson.
They can't.
Oh, we'll get there.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I know. On the sentencing judge said on the record that she is angry at legislation that she can't sentence Michael longer than 11 years, and that this is one of the most heinous crimes she has ever seen, and that Michael Slager has no soul.
I mean, we can get into the nuances of what it means to be a psychopath, but yeah, basically.
Yep. So Judy is obviously devastated that he only gets 11 years. And that she didn't have the opportunity to testify like she wanted. So she gets proactive in passing Judy's Law, which would change the sentencing guidelines for felony assault and disfigurement. Okay. And this is like, she truly is like, she just lives in the hot. It's terrible. It's terrible. Well, we'll get to it. It's, you know, when you see things and then you can't ever unsee it.
Yeah. It's like the skin suit.
It's like that. Don't. Yeah. Yep. So the prosecutor in this case had gotten very, very close to Judy, and he promises Judy that he isn't done yet, and he is determined for Michael to get more than 11 years.
Well,
and
how is that going to happen if he's already in jail and prison and sentenced? Okay, well, I'm sorry.
No, these are...
Bated breath here. Bated breath.
I know. Well, because unfortunately, the fact is Judy is going to pass away, and as soon as she does, it will be homicide.
Oh...
Uh-huh. So the prosecutor approaches Judy's mom, Bonnie, and said they would like to get Judy to testify and get it on tape to be submitted after her passing. So this would be the first time in U.S. history that a victim has testified at their own homicide trial.
Oh my God, I got chills.
Mm-hmm.
This is like official though, right? Like a deposition, but depositions are only used in like civil matters. Is that right?
Usually, yes. So this is terrible. In order to testify under oath, a person can't be under the influence and needs to be of sound mind, which means that Judy needs to come off all of her pain meds prior to her deposition.
Oh no.
She does it.
Oh my God.
She fucking does it. And at several points, like leading up to it, she's just crying and saying, I hurt, I hurt, I hurt, I hurt. Judy ends up testifying in a taped deposition from her hospital bed. She said that on August 2nd, she was with Michael Slager and they stopped at the Speedway to buy cigarettes. Judy said that outside of the Speedway, her and Michael got into an argument that lasted about 5 to 10 minutes, and she threw her pop on him. She said Michael became extremely upset, and that is when he went and grabbed his can of gasoline from the back of his truck. He then ran over to her and started pouring it over her head and all over her body. She said that some went down her throat, which burned really bad. She said that Michael didn't respond at all to her cries for help, and that he said, "You want to throw a pop on me? See what I do to you, bitch. How do you like it?"
This is not the same thing.
Yeah, she said. Then he got out his lighter and set her on fire. And she said that he just stood there and did nothing while she screamed for help. She testified for 3 hours.
Oh, my God.
And because, you know, it's painful for her to talk and she talks very slow and the whole thing. I can't even imagine.
And as soon as they were done, she clicked the button and went into a heroin
an opiate dream. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, very shortly after her testimony, she is moved to hospice care and she passes away.
Oh, my God.
I know. And her mom and her sister.
Is it because so much of her skin was unrecoverable, like unable to heal? Because like the skin is like this a really important organ.
They could not believe that she was alive for just under 2 years. They could not believe it. Like when her mom first got to the hospital, they were like, yeah, she has minutes to live.
She's done. Yeah.
They could not believe that she lived that long.
Incredible.
Yeah.
That is incredible.
And at one point, it was so fucking sad. At one point in this documentary, her sister was talking and was basically like, because she's just in pain 24/7, just in constant pain. And was like, basically like, why can't we just move her to hospice and put like, why can't we do
like assisted suicide basically? Yeah. Right?
And basically the response was because then it's not murder. So she has to suffer for this to work. Yeah.
Wow.
So Michael Slager is charged with murder and he is facing the death penalty and he decides
it's Ohio.
He goes to trial. So the defense attorney's goal is to make sure that Judy's testimony is not admissible at trial. And the defense argues that there is no ability for the defense to cross-examine or for the defendant to face his accused. So the judge...
That's bullshit. Nobody ever gets to face their accuser if they're being tried for murder.
Well, no, I know. Well, but also no victim has ever testified in their own homicide.
That particular argument, it doesn't hold up for me. I could see that as a legitimate, but like we can't. I'm sorry.
Well, this is, I mean.
He can't face his accuser in his murder trial? Mm-hmm. No, buddy.
Well,
no.
Luckily, the judge agreed. But honestly, after the judge reviews the tape and the defense did cross-examine her in her deposition, you know, she answered quite a bit from the defense.
Oh, the defense attorney was there too?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Seriously? Oh, for God's sake. I mean.
Well, normally in a trial, things will come up and you have an opportunity to recross.
Sure.
And so I can say, I am not throwing any, I mean, first off, the defense.
Look, this is the defense's job, right? Like, this is the defense's job. At this point, they're trying to get the death penalty off the table. That's all they can do.
This is his job. And to his credit, at the end of the documentary, whoever was filming said, "Do you think he's guilty?" And he's like, "Oh, yeah." And if Judy was my loved one, the death penalty wouldn't be enough. Yeah. Anyway, so the judge reviews the tape. He's like, "No, you got to ask your questions during deposition. I'm going to allow it to be submitted." And the judge grants Judy's family's request for the video of Judy's testimony to be played in court so that Michael can see it.
Mm-hmm. And the jurors.
Yep. Yeah. So she says in her testimony that if she dies, she would like to see Michael get life without parole and not be sentenced to death. And so, yeah, ultimately, he was found guilty of murder and the judge honored Judy's wishes and he was given life without parole. He still maintains that it was an accident.
Oh, my God. Stop it.
Mm-hmm. This guy is a fucking piece of garbage. And In September of 2017, Ohio legislature signed Judy's law into effect, adding additional prison time to the sentences of attackers who intentionally disfigure their victims.
Wow.
Yeah. And she has a foundation that I'll link in the show notes where they're actually trying to make Judy's law a national law.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean,
that's like some version of hate crime or something, right? Like,
yeah, because how do you even measure the long-term effects of that? The psychological effects, everything. Ugh. Yeah.
Sister, that was fucking rough.
I know. Ugh. It was so sad to watch. Fucking sad. Her mom said when she got to the hospital, she was expecting to find like what Michael had, like she broke her arm or she burned her arm. Like she knew that she was burned, and she didn't even realize when she walked into Judy's room that she walked past her younger daughter, Judy's sister, who was out in the hall vomiting because she had walked in and seen Judy.
And it was so horrific that she
was vomiting.
Her cookies. Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
Oh, and then the other thing, and I want to take a deep dive into maybe finding out if there's like a petition or something, but one of the things that really fucking pissed me off, and there might be a GoFundMe, is her mom said, her medical bills are in the millions. And
well, yeah, I mean, 2 years and basically in the ICU and the burn mm-hmm. ward. Like,
and Ohio has a law that if any drugs are found in your systems, you don't qualify for victims assistance.
I'm sorry, what?
Because she was still active in her addiction, her mom wasn't able to get any victims assistance for her.
And that's just another way to kick fucking addicts while they're down. Jesus fucking Christ.
But I think there might be a change.org thing circulating for that. And I'm going to, if I find it, I'll put it in the show notes. Yeah, some fucking bullshit.
Well, that's that perfect victim shit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you have to be a perfect victim in order to be compensated or be supported in any way.
Mm-hmm.
Like she can't just be a human being who was brutally attacked and disfigured and ultimately murdered and qualifies because she's a human being.
Right. No. We're going to put these stipulations in place of who is worthy of being helped.
Right.
Yeah. It's so fucking gross. It's so fucking gross.
Wow. Well, I mean, Ohio. Sorry if anyone's listening from Ohio.
Sorry, Ohio. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Like condolences. Mm-hmm. Sorry about it. Mm-hmm. Jesus. Oh, sister. I don't know how to.
We just have to do a hard pivot.
We have to just.
Can we do a Wayne's World?
Get me out of here. Delaware.
I feel like it's like Mario Brothers where I just jumped into a tube so I can warp to somewhere else.
Yes. Yes. That's exactly right. Into a tube. We're warping somewhere else. You know, we're going to go to Canada.
Perfect.
Actually. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk about maple syrup.
Okay, great. I love maple syrup.
Right? That stuff's nectar of the gods, right? Like, what is going on here? Maple syrup is serious business in Canada. I mean, obviously, right?
Yeah.
Like, maple leaf is their national symbol. It's on their flag. They're, you know, you think of maple syrup. I mean, you think of Canada, right?
Maybe
Vermont. I think there's some maple syrup that comes from Vermont. But the vast majority of the world's supply of maple syrup comes from Canada. It's considered an insult to serve fake syrup on the table in Canada.
There's no Mrs. Butterworth there.
Get the fuck out of here with your artificial flavoring, okay? Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So they keep a stockpile of it in their Global Strategic Reserve, which is basically like Fort Knox of Canada.
Oh my God. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Shit.
One barrel of maple syrup is worth about $1,800, give or take at this point, because, you know, that fluctuates a little bit, but roughly. Mm-hmm. That's almost 30 times the price of oil.
Holy shit.
And if you live in Quebec and you want to work with maple syrup, you have to deal with the Federation of Maple Syrup Producers.
I'm sorry, there's a federation?
Mm-hmm. And there's kind of a war going on between those that support and are pro-federation and those that do not support and are anti. Anti Federation. There's basically a population of underground maple syrup bootleggers who want nothing to do with what the Federation was created to do.
Oh.
Some people call Quebec the Saudi Arabia of maple syrup, and the Federation is essentially OPEC.
Oh my God. Okay.
They maintain extremely strict control of the maple syrup industry, and their goal is, of course, keeping prices stable. There is a forced quota that tells syrup producers how much maple syrup they can make in any season, and the Federation represents nearly 7,000 syrup producers and controls nearly 80% of the world's maple syrup supply.
Oh my God. Who mm-hmm. knew? This is like the coupon cops. I had no idea.
Exactly. In the years where there's excess production, the extra syrup goes into the Global Strategic Reserve. And this is literally the backup maple syrup supply for the world.
In case there's a maple syrup emergency?
That's right. Oh. But really what it's about, Amber, is it's about controlling the flow. Because if sure. you can control the flow, then you can control the price.
Mm-hmm. Supply.
So then on low production years, syrup from the reserve is released into the market, right? Mm-hmm. For a lot of maple syrup producers, they're totally cool with this system. It keeps the prices stable and they're doing pretty well. But for a lot of other people, they're pissed. They want a free market without this overlord of the Federation.
Okay.
The Federation has an exclusive selling agency that all maple syrup producers have to sell through. So they can't sell just anywhere that's like independent of the Federation network, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they literally have in their regulations that all the sap that is in all the maple trees in Quebec belongs to the Federation.
Oh, okay. Are they? Okay, go on.
Well, ask questions.
Well, I'm assuming they have like fields of this for like, what if you have one of those trees in your yard?
Well, you can't like be a maple syrup producer with like a maple.
Okay, but there's,
I mean, you got to think about maple syrup producers. This is kind of like farmers, right? Mm-hmm. So depending on how big or small your lot is, how many trees you have, it's a production to tap maple syrup trees. Right. Wow. It's a whole production. And you don't just tap them and go. Like, you have to process this sap and turn it into syrup. So there's a whole.
It's
like,
not Winnie the Pooh.
No, it's not. That's honey.
Oh, I just know that.
I'm not satisfied. No, it's not a cartoon where you're just like, put the spigot in and just slurp right out of the tree. You know what I mean? It's not like that.
Okay.
The Federation of Maple Syrup Producers has been called a cartel, a communist regime, a regime of terror, a bit like the mafia, or have been likened to running sex workers where the maple syrup producers is the do all the hard work while the people in the Federation make big fat salaries like pimps.
Okay. Whoa. Mm-hmm. Fuck. All right.
And so a black market was born. A black market for maple syrup.
That's how black markets happen.
Uh huh. Over the years, the maple syrup business has been an uncertain venture. The farmers of this delicious sap of maple trees were at the mercy of all kinds of factors that would determine the amount of syrup they could make each year. And some years were very, very lean. Some farmers, during one such downturn, cut down all their maple trees, thinking they would get more for the wood than they could get for the syrup.
Oh, jeez.
So enter the Federation. Not everyone was on board with this approach, but over time, the price of the syrup went up, and many directly credit the Federation for this uptick in the value of the syrup. So the producers making the syrup who participate in the black market sell everything they produce over quota to what they call barrel rollers. And these guys resell to exporters. And this is all illegal.
Fuck.
You have to be an authorized buyer to buy and to sell. And if you're caught, these barrel rollers, they can face pretty big fines.
Okay, so this is like the peanut police not knowing that there was a whole ass factory of peanutting. So if this is like a major, like how are they, like nothing to see here, a whole farm of maple trees and we're...
Well, I mean, you got to think about like a lot of these, I mean, we're talking about, you know, like big wooded areas and it's not necessarily like only maple trees on these properties, right? Like, so they can kind of be tucked back into wooded places, right? I mean, it's mm-hmm. kind of like bootlegging.
Yeah. Okay.
Although some of these people kind of readily take on these fines because they're like double middle finger to the whole thing too.
Oh, okay.
Right? So the exporters of these barrel rollers sell to, well, a number of them live outside of Quebec. And so they're not actually regulated by the Federation. Like Quebec is a province of Canada, right? There's no other Federation or organization like them in the other provinces in Canada.
Oh.
So okay. The way they kind of skirt the law is by doing all of this outside the borders of Quebec. But the Federation says that when these exporters work with syrup producers in Quebec, those exporters are breaking Quebec law. So it's like if I'm in Washington growing weed and I'm selling it to people in a state where weed isn't legal, right? Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm breaking the law in, you know, Texas or whatever,
right?
Even though I'm perfectly within the law in Washington.
Right. Do not transport homegrown fruit.
Apple Magic Quarantine. Apple area. Magic. Do not transport homegrown fruit. Do not
transport homegrown fruit. And that's how it's done. Yeah.
Okay. So Hans Mercier is a self-proclaimed maple syrup lawyer who has taken up the cause of the so-called criminal black market producers. He firmly believes these people have a right not to be fined into poverty by the Federation. He has even argued in court that these fines are unconstitutional because the fines can get really big, some even owing fines in the millions for working outside the regulations of the Federation.
Holy shit. Okay.
The Federation really wants to paint these people as criminals and like greedy crooks. But Hans thinks they're just fighting the good fight and he's throwing down with the cause.
Mm-hmm.
He actually won that in appeal on the unconstitutionality of the fines. But then a few months later, the government came in with a special law and reinstated these large fines. So this is the power of the Federation. They make the rules, apply the rules, and they cash in on these fines.
Mm-hmm. A lot of rules are that way. It be that way.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So many people have refused inspections. At some point, a group of at least 50 people stood outside one producer's operation to blockade an inspector from entering. At some point, there was a 2-week period where 3 maple syrup production facilities burned to the ground and all 3 were owned by regional Federation presidents. So it's heated.
Shit's getting serious.
Serious shit. Yes, exactly.
Wow.
So late August 2012, the Federation files a complaint to the Provincial Police Corps reporting a theft at the warehouse of the Strategic Reserve, a theft of maple syrup.
No.
But how are you going to track down maple syrup in oil drums? That's basically what they're in, right? These big, they look like oil drums. There's no GPS, there's no serial number on a barrel of maple syrup, and you can eat it and make it disappear, right?
I mean, yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So a special investigation team is put together to track down this maple syrup with 250 investigators. This was the biggest crime scene they had ever investigated. The first 2 weeks was just them figuring out which barrels were empty and which barrels were still full. They noticed that one of the barrels had rust on it, which is odd because maple syrup doesn't sweat. There's no reason for condensation to collect on the outside of these barrels and cause the metal to rust. And as they inspected further and started opening barrels, they found that a bunch of them were filled with water. They determined that 9,561 barrels had been stolen.
Holy shit.
That is more than $18 million worth of maple syrup.
Oh my God. How does one do that?
Yeah, this was the biggest theft ever in Quebec. This is the largest amount that's ever been stolen in the province.
At first, I was like, they got 250 people looking for a tank of syrup. Like, you have nothing else to do, but never mind. This sounds serious.
It's a lot, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Crazy fans. And you got to remember, maple syrup is serious business.
I keep...
The Federation does not fuck around, Amber.
I keep forgetting.
There's no joking in maple syrup.
I'm sorry.
At least 223 people are questioned as police try to find the culprits of this massive theft. Avik Caron was one of the owners of the warehouse. Prior to the purchase of the warehouse, he had been convicted of fraud against an insurance company for faking an auto theft. So this guy is immediately sus. And he had purchased the warehouse in 2010, and 2011, the Federation rented out a portion of the warehouse for their global strategic reserve.
Well, I'm sorry. The Federation is renting out a portion of a warehouse from someone that's already been convicted right? of fraud. That's
like
they
didn't background check this guy.
What's your vetting process? You have 250 people looking for fucking syrup. You couldn't have run a background check.
I mean, we're talking about millions and millions and millions mm-hmm. of dollars of product, right? Right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That's on you. Someone within the Federation had their own theory about who one of the main ringleaders of this theft was, because the size of this theft pointed to many hands being involved. It wasn't like one or two guys, right?
Yeah, no.
Richard Valliere, who was a suspect in an earlier maple syrup theft in 2003. There wasn't any definitive evidence against him at first, but he did confess to being a barrel roller, which he had been fined over $1 million for in the past. But this guy wasn't a mastermind criminal. He was a dude who worked with maple syrup. His dad had a sugar shack in the bush, as they say. So he'd grown up in a syrup farming family, and he was just working outside of the Federation, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he was on their list. Investigators were pretty sure Valliere was involved simply because this is a guy who knows how to sell maple syrup on the black market and had no problems being forthright about that. I mean, clearly this guy didn't feel bad about it.
Right, right.
And let's be clear. The money from those fines went straight to the Federation. So they're still making money off these guys when they're caught. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So forensic evidence started coming in, fingerprints, footprints, scratches on the barrels. Apparently, the warehouse workers normally use a specific kind of forklift that doesn't leave marks on the barrels. But the barrels that were either empty or filled with water had marks on them. So they knew that this came from some other forklift. So the investigators started hitting up all the equipment rental shops in town, trying to track down who rented the forklift that would have been used in the theft. And sure enough, one of the people on their suspects list had left his name at one of the rental places.
Mm.
Sebastien Jutras. That's how you say his last name.
Nailed it.
Sebastien claims he was just a driver. He had no idea the syrup was stolen. But what came to light was he was actually the connector between Avik Caron and Richard Valliere. So Avik was no stranger to fraud, but he had no experience with maple syrup. And if he stole this syrup, he would need a way to move it. It was mm-hmm. Sebastien that knew Richard Valliere, who was a veteran of the maple syrup black market. So he put these two together.
Right.
And there's a record of the three of these dudes meeting at a truck stop in Quebec in June of 2011, where the plan was hatched and the three agreed, this is what we're going to do. And they got themselves some burner phones and they got to work.
Oh my God. Burner phones. This is awesome. Yes. For syrup. I love it. Okay.
Maple syrup. You're never going to mm-hmm. pour a bottle of maple syrup on a pancake or a waffle and not think of this now.
I know. Like, do I have black market syrup here or FDA approved syrup? I don't know.
Federation. Official Federation sorry. Syrup.
Mm-hmm.
So the theft occurred over a period of time. They knew that they had time to do it because the supply is only inventoried once a year.
Oh, yeah.
The reserve supply. So they brought in a bunch of people to help pull it off. The three of them couldn't do it alone. They would take barrels out and replace them with fake barrels, either filled with water or just empty. They painted these fakes with the exact same paint color as the barrels that they were stealing, which were all identical painted barrels. And they also printed and stuck on labels that looked like the Federation labels.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Well thought out. Okay.
Yeah. Once they were removed, they were transported to another warehouse that was rented by Richard Valliere and transferred to other containers. And after filling the original barrels with water, most of the time they'd be returned to the original warehouse minus the syrup. So it was like they would put a barrel in place, deal with it, and then swap it back out.
Mm-hmm. They got a whole rotation system going.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. The Clever. Stolen syrup was sold to an exporter, Etienne St. Pierre, who sold it to places in the US, Europe, and Japan. This is what he did. He was an exporter. He was in New Brunswick, so he was outside of Quebec. But Richard Valliere had made a bad pick in business partners when he decided to team up with Avik Caron. There were rumors that Avik had ties to the mafia, and based on the text messages exchanged between Richard and Avik, Richard's anxiety was rising, but at this point he was in too deep to walk away. So at some point, he was certain that a Federation official had seen one of their trucks. And he claims that Avik told him after that the theft was discovered, "I know where you live, and if you say anything, you'll be shot in the head."
Holy shit. Mm.
Serious business.
Serious fucking business.
Serious business. $18 million worth of syrup, Amber.
I know. Fuck.
Sebastian testified against Richard and Avik. The authorities also came for the exporter, Etienne, claiming he was a party to the crime. He, of course, denies that he had anything to do with it. He was just selling syrup.
Yeah. I am but a humble syrup salesman.
That's mm-hmm. right. Mm-hmm. Sure. That didn't stop them from seizing everything he had. And I mean everything.
Oh.
Altogether, 16 people were arrested in connection with the crime. Theft, conspiracy, and fraud were among the charges brought against all the suspects arrested in this case. Some of the people who are against the Federation see this whole group of thieves as sort of like heroes of the cause that maybe just got a little carried away. These guys are ultimately still fighting against the Federation, so they're fighting the good fight in their own way.
Yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah. Vigilante right, justice. Right?
Yeah, 100%. Etienne St-Pierre received 2 years house arrest, and he was slapped with a little over $1 million fine. Avik Caron received a 6-year sentence and a $1.7 million fine.
Shit.
Richard Vallier received 8 years and an almost $10 million fine. At some point, he appealed this fine, and it was reduced to a little over $1 million, which was the amount he claimed to have actually made from the sale of the stolen syrup. But last April in 2022, a higher court reversed that appeal and ordered him to pay the original amount of $10 million or face 6 more years in prison. So apparently, the way the law is written in the original fine he received was based on the value that they attributed to his theft, not how much he made on the theft. And he appealed it and was granted like a reduction of that fine. And then on a second appeal, like a counter appeal higher up the court system, they reversed that and made it back to like the original full amount of the fine that they gave him when he was originally sentenced.
So didn't they recover most of the product, though? I mean, he might have stolen it. Oh, it was a total loss for them. All of the stolen.
I think it was a total loss. Yes.
Okay. Well,
that and all was- went out the door or down the highway.
Or in the rusty barrel. Yeah. Down the highway. Yep. Outside of Quebec's Providence lines.
That's right. So I will end with a quote from one of the gals in this doc that I watched, who's, you know, one of these rogue maple syrup producers. She said, "In Quebec, drugs are decriminalized, but they have criminalized maple syrup."
Wow. Fucking maple syrup.
Mm-hmm.
Who knew?
Mm-hmm. I first like learned about this story, and I went back and rewatched this to do the write up on this episode of Dirty Money on Netflix. I don't know if you've seen that show.
I have.
And I, you know, and it's like, it's crazy, right? Because I'm watching the show. The first time I watched this series, it's another one of those anthology series, right? Where each episode's a different topic. And like, you know, they're covering like Donald Trump and Jared Kushner and like how horrible, you know, whatever, like, you know, that kind of stuff. And then all of a sudden, it's like the next episode comes on and it's like maple syrup. And I'm like, what is happening? And I was like, what? This is crazy, fans.
That's not an obvious transition. Oh my God. Maple syrup.
Underground black market for maple syrup, Amber.
Oh my God. I fucking love that. Yeah. Wow. Wow. Good for them.
Mm-hmm. That is the maple syrup heist.
Yep. That is chaotic, sister. I fucking love that so much. Wow.
Wow. Well, we did it. We made it through.
Whew. Yeah. That was a good balance after a very rough crime.
Yes. Yes. You're welcome. Well, you know what? I've had that one in my back pocket for a while. Like, it's been on my list. Mm-hmm. And then you texted me the other day and was like, "My crime is rough." And I'm like, all right, I'm pulling out the maple syrup.
Good. That was It's time to pull out the big guns.
And of course, the whole time I'm watching it, I'm like, I really want pancakes and syrup now.
Right? Oh my God. So
great.
I fucking love it. Waffles are, that's my jam.
Love a waffle. I love a pancake. I love a waffle. I'll go either way. I'll go either way. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
As long as there's butter melting on there. And then, a bunch of syrup. I want to see like ribbons of melted butter, like in, right? Like with, like just running through the syrup as it, you know? Yeah. Like I want to,
I do know.
And I want to like kind of slop it up off the, you know, I want to like mop it up off the
Fuck,
plate.
That sounds like, amazing. I'm stuffed too. I just had dinner. That sounds amazing.
And I mean, there's always room for pancakes and waffles. Do we have anything for the good of the order, sister?
Just our usual. Follow us on all the things. You can send us story suggestions, mail, send the hate mail to Naomi, the love letters to me.
Crime1inchaos@gmail.com.
I get it.
That's right. That's right.
We're on all the socials.
It's true.
It is true. Okay. We're dipping our toe into TikToking.
Yes. What do you have, like one video up? Is that what's going on? Did you put up more?
I put up another one and they said no.
They said no?
Yeah.
Is it because of swearing?
I think so.
See, I don't think we're TikTok friendly.
Okay. Well, we just need to get better at video editing and doing the little like cartoony bleep thing, because I'm not kidding you. I watched like a little, you know, whatever, 30-second TikTok blurb. I don't know how it ended up in my suggested for you, but it literally was a TikTok about this woman going on about how like men shouldn't complain about women's genitals smelling because their balls smell bad.
But we can't say fuck.
Right.
Okay. Okay.
So I still don't understand the landmines of TikTok, but we're getting there.
I don't think anyone understands the landmines of TikTok. Let's be clear.
I don't know why the fuck that was suggested for me. I'm like, we've all smelled balls.
Well, you haven't really trained the algo well yet. You have to be on there a lot and like really train it. Really train it. You
got to put in the time.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, you know, maybe we'll figure it out. I think we got like 5 likes on that first one. So
sweet. Taking my 5 likes and I'm running with it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Well, sister, that was really fucking chaotic.
Chaotic. Love you.
Love you. Bye.
Bye. Wine and Chaos is produced by 8th Direction Records. Artwork by Joshua M. Davis. Music by Paul Abner. If you would like to support the show, you can visit our Patreon page at crimewineandchaos.com/Patreon. Cheers. I can't seem to get my head into the game, so I don't know what I need.